I know of a church that is opposite a nightclub. The nightclub is famous in the area for all sorts of immorality that go on there. And I imagine it's quite strange hearing the two songs clashing on a Sunday night. On one side, thumps out songs of drunkenness and hookups. And across the street, a quite traditional congregation will be singing hymns to an organ to the glory of God. What a picture, what a sound of the difference between our world and the world around us. Isaiah uses that idea of two songs in our passage. There is the song of the drunkards, not too different from the songs of a nightclub. And there's the songs of the glory of God, not too different, God willing, from the songs of that church. Now, this isn't about what music you listen to in the car, but it's a metaphor for where we find joy in this world. If we're singing in our hearts the songs of this world, we find joy in the things of this life. We're singing the song of success, the song of pleasure, the song of self-reliance. Or we can sing the song of God. We can find our joy in Him above all other things. I wonder where you find your joy. Because your soul is singing one of these two songs. It either rejoices in this world or it rejoices in God. Isaiah tells us that the right answer to that question. One of these songs will be silenced on the last day. And one of these songs is eternal. And Isaiah wants us to be singing that song. So whether you've been in church your whole life, or whether you're exploring faith, Isaiah's message is for you and what's going on in your heart. In a few moments, we'll look at this passage and consider those two songs. But before we do, let me catch you up with where we're at in Isaiah. We've been doing Isaiah slowly but surely, taking breaks every so often. And we've not been in Isaiah since July. So let me recap where we've already been. Isaiah was a prophet 700 years before Jesus. And as I was listening to Alexander speaking before, I was thinking how similar Isaiah's experience was. He was preaching in a time of turmoil. The great empire of Assyria had come sweeping through God's people. At that time, God's people were split into two nations, Israel, the northern kingdom, and Judah, the southern kingdom. Israel was completely wiped off the map. Their superpower came sweeping through, destroying homes, destroying families, taking people off as slaves. Judah, where Isaiah was preaching, holding on by the skin of their teeth. Perhaps Isaiah, like Alexander, was walking around the ruins of his people and asking what message God had to speak. And God did have a message to speak. But the message was that the people didn't have to just hold on in an unjust war. That this judgment that was coming on them was completely justified as a punishment for their sin. And so Isaiah in this book is challenging the kings and the people of Israel to trust God in the midst of turmoil. Chapters 1 to 6 set up the state of God's people. They've forsaken God's promises and they've rejected Isaiah's preaching. Chapters 7 to 12 show a king of Judah who's failing to trust in God, but it prophesies a future king, the Lord Jesus, who will trust in God. Chapters 13 to 23 zoom out a bit and we see there God's plan for all the nations of the world. God doesn't just care about Jerusalem, he cares about Babylon and Egypt and Moab and all these other countries. And then chapters 24 to 27 continue to talk about judgment, but they go forward in time. It may look like the war is happening on Israel right now, but it says that one day there will be a judgment that will come on the whole world. God will judge his enemies and save his people. And that is where we'll be looking in the next few weeks. And in this passage particularly, there is the description of the judgment of the wicked, and there is the description of the joy of those who trust God when Jesus returns. Or as I've said before, there's the silenced song, and the eternal song. With that in mind, let's listen to Isaiah as he describes these two songs and the two destinies they lead to. First of all, there is the silenced song. And we see that in verses 1 to 12 and in verses 16 to 20. The silenced song. The world in rebellion to God is often singing songs about that rebellion. But this passage tells us about those songs being silenced. Look at verse 7 to 11. The new wine dries up and the vine withers. All the merrymakers groan. The joyful tambourines are stilled. The noise of the revelers has stopped. The joyful harp is silent. No longer do they drink wine with a song. The beer is bitter to its drinkers. The ruined city lies desolate. The entrance to every house is barred. In the streets they cry out for wine. All joy turns to gloom. All joyful sounds are banished from the earth. The songs are silenced. I took the boys to go and see Crewe versus Grimsby the other week, and it was quite funny. Neither sets of fans are very faithful. So the Grimsby fans started singing as Grimsby scored and made it 1-0. And then Crewe scored and the songs came a bit louder. And Crewe scored again, the songs a bit louder. Then Grimsby scored and they started singing again. And by the end, the Crewe fans scored in the end and they were singing the songs as they went. They completely, none of them kept singing when things weren't going their way. They were very much based on what their team was doing. And you often hear fans at football matches singing to the other set of fans, "You're not singing anymore." Well, that's what is happening on the last day. There's all these songs about joy and drunkenness and life without God. But on that last day, God will say, "You're not singing anymore. And you never will again." There's no denying that sometimes there is great joy to be found in this present age. Sometimes we sing songs, or at least we feel we could. When the world is going well, we might be tempted to think, who needs God when life is this good? But one day, the song of rebellion against God will be silenced, and it will never be started again. There will be no more songs, because there will be no more joy. What silences that song? Well, the song is silenced because of the devastation around them. Listen to some of the descriptions here. They're not just temporary judgments. They're the world being devastated. Verse 4, the earth dries up and withers. The world languishes and withers. The heavens languish with the earth. The world is like a plant that has not been watered, shriveling up and dying, nature being destroyed. And as well as nature, human achievements are being judged as well. Verse 12, the city is left in ruins, its gate battered to pieces. The cities in those days were the place you went to if you wanted to be safe. They were this testament to human strength. And great cities of the world went and invaded other cities. So the great cities of Assyria were coming and sweeping through, destroying the cities of Israel and Judah. But it was those cities that would one day be destroyed. All human achievement, all human strength is gone. Now this is pointing forward to the final judgment. There's never been a time where the whole earth, even the heavens, the skies above have withered. But one day, this world will wither. It'll be like walking to your home and seeing it completely destroyed. Everything we have worked for in this world will be gone in a moment when Jesus returns. How can this be fair, we might wonder. Well, the song is silenced because of sin. People have rebelled against God and now they must pay the cost. Look at verses 5 to 6. After describing the world withering, it says, the earth is defiled by its people. They have disobeyed the laws, violated the statutes, and broken the everlasting covenant. Therefore, a curse consumes the earth. Its people must bear their guilt. Therefore, earth's inhabitants are burned up, and very few are left. They've broken the laws of God. They've rebelled against him, and there are consequences, and these are the consequences. Halfway through verse 16, we read, "But I said, I waste away, I waste away. Woe to me, the treacherous betray. With treacherousy, the treacherous betray. Terror and pit and snare await you, people of the earth. Whoever flees at the sound of terror will fall into a pit. Whoever climbs out of the pit will be caught in a snare." Isaiah's in pain because there's this treachery on the earth, this betrayal. And the people are punished because they betray God. They disobey his commands. And they're not going to escape. They'll fall into a pit that they can't climb out of. Carrying on in verse 18, it seems like the flood of Noah is in the background, and it's saying that this will be like the flood of Noah in a certain sense. The floodgates of the heavens are opened. The foundations of the earth shake. The earth is broken up. The earth is split asunder. The earth is violently shaken. The earth reels like a drunkard. It sways like a hut in the wind. So heavy upon it is the guilt of its rebellion that it falls, never to rise again. Again, these are painful descriptions of natural disaster, but the reason is very clear. The guilt of its rebellion is coming. We might begin to think, when we think of judgment, that, well, it belongs to those supervillains of history, the Vladimir Putins, the Adolf Hitlers. But this is the fate of anyone who has sinned. They have chosen to rebel against God. As soldiers on a battlefield, whether it was in World War I or World War II or the war in Ukraine, when they have their gun in their hands and they're aiming at the enemy, they don't go into a full-on discussion about the rights and wrongs of that individual person. They look at the badge on their shoulder. If they're German, if they're Russian, they're the enemy. And so it is with God. Who do we ally ourselves with? If we have chosen to rebel against God, if we are God's enemy, then this is our fate. Because God, when he fights his battles, he never loses. Who does this affect? Is it just one small part of society? Well, no, the song is silenced for everyone, every type of person. Verse 2, it will be the same for priest as for people, for the master as for his servant, for the mistress as for her servant, for seller as for buyer, for borrower as for lender, for debtor as for creditor. Normally those who are richer are more secure, they're more safe. And for many of the problems of this world, the rich, they're able to get away from things. But not in that day. Everyone, from the richest to the poorest, from the slaves to the masters, everyone will have to pay the price for their rebellion against God. Most of us spend our lives protecting ourselves and our families, earning an income to pay the bills, getting a safe home in a good area. We're not millionaires, but we're sufficient. But on that day, none of those safety nets will protect us. From the highest to the lowest, all will be judged. Now, can we be certain this is going to happen? Is this just fear-mongering? Well, we can be certain it's going to happen because the song is silenced by God himself. It is emphatic. Verse 1, see, the Lord is going to lay waste to the earth and devastate it. He will ruin its face and scatter its inhabitants. Verse 3, the earth will be completely laid waste and totally plundered. The Lord has spoken this word. The Lord has spoken this word. And when God speaks, it happens. He always keeps his promises. And we need to face that reality. I was watching recently an older film, Catch Me If You Can. I don't know if you've seen it. It tells the true story of this man, Frank Abagnale, who was a young man who committed one of the most impressive feats of fraud ever. He managed to pass himself off as a pilot, as a doctor, as a lawyer, and he lived this life of luxury on the back of fraudulent checks and pretending to be these people by wearing their uniforms. But there is this detective who is chasing him down. And during the film, there's various times when Frank Abagnale rings the detectives. And at a certain point, Frank finds a woman that he wants to marry. He doesn't want to be running around the world escaping from the police anymore. And so he rings this detective and he says, "I want it to be over. I'm getting married, you know, I'm settling down." And the detective laughs down the phone and he replies, "You've stolen almost $4 million. You think we can just call that a wedding present? Now, this isn't something you can walk away from, Frank. I want to call a truce." "No truce. You will be caught. You will go to prison. Where did you think this was going?" Well, God will say the same to you if you reject him on the last day. Where did you think this was going? You lived a life in complete rebellion to your Maker. "I sent preachers to you, but you refused to repent and believe. I warned you of the hell that was coming, and you didn't listen. Where did you think this was going? I gave you a chance." This passage paints in stark colors where this world is going. There is no joy in the judgment. There are no songs. All joy turns to gloom. All joyful sounds are banished. Think of the most painful and sad moment in your life. That is a pinprick in comparison to what the eternal judgment will be. And it is fully deserved. God is the source of all joy. If you rebel against him, you rebel against joy and goodness and love, and you will be left with all that is without God, which is sorrow and hatred. But there is a difference between you and Frank Abagnale, because amazingly, God says you can call the truce. You can say, "I want this to be over now." The Bible calls that repentance. All God asks for is for you to admit that your rebellion against him was wrong. And God will take away this judgment. You see, he's not saying this as the final word yet. He's saying it as a warning. He's saying, "This is coming. And this is where you're heading. If you don't change, if you don't turn from your sin and trust in my son." Looking hard at this judgment, why would you ever run headfirst into it? Every song will be silenced. There will be devastation for all eternity. It will come to all, great and small, in this world. All have sinned and all will be judged. And it is God who's doing this, so you can be certain it's coming. Don't let your songs of joy be silenced. Turn while there's a chance and trust in Jesus alone for salvation. And he will release you from the pit that you can't climb out of yourself. And Christians, it's good for us to be reminded of this, because the songs of this world can sound so joyful, so fun. It can seem like all the pleasure in this present age is happening for those who don't believe in Jesus. We don't enjoy reflecting on the eternal suffering of those who reject Jesus. But it is vital from time to time we remind ourselves of what is coming. Because being a Christian can be hard. And if we forget how serious the consequences are for leaving Jesus, then we might be tempted to give it up as well. It would be easier. There may be more songs in this life if we just walk away from Jesus. But we need to keep this judgment before us to remind ourselves that we need to stick with him. And it also reminds us of the urgency of sharing the gospel with others. As Alexander was looking around the streets and seeing the destroyed buildings, he had a more realistic picture than we do as we walk around and see nice detached houses with good cars and happy smiling families, because actually a war zone is more like the reality. As we look around on people who seem like they've got it all together, seem like life is happy, we need to be reminded that this is their fate if they don't hear the gospel. We'll recognize when we do that nothing is more important than this message is shared with them. So that's the silenced song. And if that was all I had to say today, well, there'd be no hope. We'd be the ultimate killjoys. All joy turned to gloom. All joyful sounds banished from the earth. What a horrible message that would be if it was all. But this passage isn't about silencing every song. It's about silencing the wrong songs. There are songs of joy in this passage as well as the silenced songs. Songs that point to the victory of God. And so now we'll look at the eternal songs in verses 13 to 16 and verse 21 to 23. So after each section of judgment, he closes off by giving a glimmer of hope. They encourage us, first of all, to sing the song of the remnant. Now, you might not remember what the remnant is. It's been a while since we've been in Isaiah. The remnant, it literally just kind of means the leftovers. It's a small group. So there's going to be this great judgment on the majority of people in Israel who reject God. But there is a remnant of people who trust in God and they will remain. Isaiah talks about that in his present day with the invasion from Assyria, but he's now talking about it in the future as well. That though the vast majority of people on this earth will be judged, as described in Isaiah 24, there will be a remnant. There will be people who are faithful to God. What will happen to them? Verse 13. So will it be on the earth and among the nations, as when an olive tree is beaten, or when gleanings are left after the harvest. Now, agriculture in ancient Israel wasn't like it is today. A farmer wants to get every last olive. He's not going to leave any bits of wheat that could go off to Tesco's or wherever and make him an income. But in those days, you didn't have tractors. You didn't have the same kind of technology we do today. And so there was always a chance of some leftovers. You'd beat a tree of olives and some of them would come down. You'd collect them in your basket and you'd go and take them to market to sell. But a few would remain in the upper branches. And it would be the similar with grain as well. In fact, they were encouraged to leave some grain so that the poor could have something to eat. And God's saying the world's like that. There's this great beating to come. There's this great harvest to come. But there will be some leftovers. There will be a remnant. What do this remnant do? Well, they sing a joyful song. Verse 14, they raise their voices, they shout for joy. From the west, they acclaim the Lord's majesty. This is only a few verses after we're told that all songs will be silenced. And I think Isaiah is deliberately setting up a contrast here. These drunken songs of the people of this world, they will be silenced, they will be judged. But for the ones that trust in Jesus, there will be this great joy. If you ever look through the book of Revelation, you'll notice that there's a lot of poetry in there. There's a lot of songs. It's like reading the script to a musical. Nearly every page, there's a new song that is sung in heaven. Heaven and the new creation are full of songs because they are full of joy. God isn't saying, leave the joy of this world for the misery of being a Christian. He's saying the very opposite. He's saying, flee the misery of judgment, so that you can sing the songs of joy for all eternity. And it is a global song. For Isaiah at this point, the amount of people worshipping God must seem to be getting smaller and smaller and smaller as the tribes of Israel, as the cities of Judah are invaded. But he sees this vision of all the nations of the world from across the globe coming to trust in him. Look again at verse 14. From the west they acclaim the Lord's majesty. Therefore in the east they give glory to the Lord. Exalt the name of the Lord, the God of Israel, in the islands of the sea. We had a men's breakfast recently, and Mark, who was coming to speak to us, talked about booking tickets to go to Timbuktu, which is actually a real place in Mali. But if you go to a travel agent and you ask for a ticket to Timbuktu in the UK, they probably think you're off your rocker. They think it's an imaginary place. Well, for Israel, the West, the East, and islands, I mean, there's not many islands near Israel. They just seemed like these far-off magical kingdoms. Yeah, that prophecy has been fulfilled, hasn't it? In the East and the west, and even in little island nations like ours, there is singing of praise to God. But it's nothing compared to what it will be like in eternity. John tells us in the book of Revelation that he sees in heaven a great multitude that no one could count, from every tribe, from every people and language. This great host are sitting round the throne. They aren't angels, they are humans from across the globe. And that's the goal. That's where we're heading. And that's what Isaiah is prophesying. He's saying, look to this glorious future when people from across the globe will be worshipping God in joy. And what is it they're singing? Well, they're singing a song of praise to God. Verse 16, from the ends of the earth we hear singing, glory to the righteous one. The holy God, the righteous God, the one who is completely pure and good in all his ways, he will be praised for eternity. And that is what his people will rejoice and find satisfaction in. Verses 21 to 23 is a bit more earthy. It's a bit more of a description, once again, of the punishment that comes upon the earth. But once again, it does end in joy. Verse 21, in that day the Lord will punish the powers in the heavens above and the kings on the earth below. They will be herded together like prisoners bound in a dungeon. They will be shut up in a prison and be punished after many days. The moon will be dismayed, the sun ashamed, for the Lord Almighty will reign on Mount Zion and in Israel and before its elders with great joy. The big picture in these verses is that God is the winner. That's not good news if you're God's enemy, but it is if you're his ally. The Lord reigns from Jerusalem over the whole earth. And both the kings of this earth and the rulers in heaven, and that's describing presumably Satan and those angels that have fallen, they're all defeated. They're all locked up. And the elders of Israel glorify God again. Now, let me just dig into some particulars which might interest you if you're familiar with the language about the end of the world from the New Testament. You can see so much of these verses foreshadowed in the New Testament. So there are lots of passages in the New Testament that speak about the powers in heaven being thrown into a pit. So 2 Peter 2 verse 4 speaks of the demons being kept in eternal chains under gloomy darkness until the judgment. Matthew 24:29 speaks, as it does here, of the sun being darkened and the moon not giving its light. Revelation speaks of the glory of the Lord being the light of the New Jerusalem. And it even pictures the elders coming and casting their crowns before Jesus. So if you're a Bible nerd like me, you'll probably find that fascinating. And over the next few weeks, we'll see how many pictures of the end of the world actually come from these passages in Isaiah, even though you probably didn't realize it before. It's all showing us that we're on the right lines to think this isn't just about Assyria invading Israel. This is about the second coming. And it shows that God's plan has always been the same. Although it became clearer in the New Testament what God was doing, God's plan has always been to eternally judge those who reject him, and to give eternal joy to those who trust him. But even if those references to the New Testament shoot over your head, the big picture of these verses are clear. There are two options. There is judgment, and that song will be silenced. But there is also great joy, eternal joy, available to those who trust in the Lord. So as we close, I want you to think once more about those two songs. First, the silenced song, the song that finds joy apart from God. We can't deny that there is lots of things that bring joy to people in our world who don't trust in Jesus. Not all of them are bad. Some of them are good gifts from God. But in the long run, if you try to live a life without God, all the songs of joy in your life will be silenced. Is that song your song? Are you choosing to live in rebellion against God? It may be happy in the short term, but the long-term implications are terrifying. You're on the opposite side of God, and you will bear the consequences of that judgment for all eternity. Do not make that great mistake. Confess your sin, turn from it, and ask God to save you. Everyone in this room had to do the same thing who trusts in Jesus. We all had to see that that judgment was rightly deserved. And we had to turn and confess our sin and trust in Jesus. Only Jesus deserved that eternal song of joy. But he gives us the chance to turn away, to repent of our old way of life, and to trust in his death so that we can sing the song of joy forever. There is a silent song, but there's also an eternal song. And what a joy it is to think of that. For many of us, our song on this earth will be a lament. We think of our brothers and sisters in Ukraine and in many parts of the world suffering. And we can think of people at home. Maybe we think about ourselves. People grieving. People facing turmoil in their home lives. People battling temptation. There's all of these pains that make us cry out to God, "How long, O Lord?" But there is hope. There is hope of a final joy. One day we will sing the joy of heaven. We will sing the praise of God. And it will all have been worth it. Joy will be ours forevermore. So don't be distracted from that eternal song. Keep looking to the day when all wrongs will be righted and eternal joy will be yours. There are two songs with two destinies. Make sure you're heading to the destiny of joy forevermore. Turn to Jesus.